First I was a Catholic girl, loved the mass, I watched the swirl of smoke from candles burning, while Mary looked up yawning.
Hello and welcome to the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM here in Knoxville, Tennessee. We're recording this on Sunday morning, September 17th. I'm Larry Rhodes, or DJ Doubter 5. And as usual, we have our co-host, Wombat, on the line with us. Hello, Wombat.
Ahoy! Stealing just a little bit of the thunder from our own Dread Pirate Higgs, but...
And ahoy, back. Dread Pirate Higgs.
There you go. There it is.
A proper pirate.
proper pirate.
Digital Free Thought Radio Hour is a talk radio show about atheism, free thought, rational thought, humanism, and the sciences. And conversely, we'll also talk about religions, religious faiths, Pastafarianism, gods, holy books, and superstition. And if you think you're the only non-believer in your town, well, you're just not. Here in Knoxville, in the middle of the Bible Belt, where you think we wouldn't have any, we have a group of over 1,000 of us, card-carrying members. We're the Atheist Society of Knoxville, or ASK, and we'll tell you more about us after the mid-show break, so be sure to stick around. Wombat, what's our topic today?
I want to talk about people becoming ornaments, leading into a conversation about gender. I want to talk about unity and how they're now charging more people, as if corporations don't necessarily have the best interests of its consumers, and how that actually applies to religion, and how religion can also operate as a corporation as well. And then if we got time, I want to talk about a new word that I came up with, and we'll see the three criteria that make you that particular word. But before we get into the meat and potatoes of today's show, how about a dish of pasta led to us by our own Dread Pirate Higgs?
Arr! Come be me, Captain, I shall not want. He maketh me to float in salt water. He steereth me through glassy seas. He filleth me bowl. He steereth me through the straits of noodliness, for goodness sake. Aye, though I sail through the heaving of tempestuous waters, I will fear not sinking. For thou art with me, thy mast and thy rudder, they comfort me. Thou preparest a feast before me in the presence of me mates. Thou quenchest my thirst with grog. My goblet runneth over. Truly, pasta and grog shall abide with me all the days of me life, and I shall dwell in the galley of the Quab forever.
Amen. Fantastic. I love it. Hey, Dredd, you will be very happy to know that Netflix has come out with a new show called One Piece, a live action version of a popular manga series that's out, that's about pirates. Oh. And the problem is previously Netflix has had a very bad track record from adopting comic books, particularly Japanese comic books, into live action dramas. However, okay. This time, it's unanimously approved as like a quality transition from the comic show. And I can tell you, maybe the key point was pirates, because everybody loves pirates. Not necessarily everybody loves space cowboys or emos or demons, but pirates, everybody can get behind that. And they found like a really good way to just showcase, hey, we're just having fun. It's pirates.
And what's the name of the show?
One Piece. Okay. Yes, you'd love it for world building. I mean, I think it'd be actually something that you'd get behind. Though,
okay, I'll check it out.
I'll see if we
can put the Pastafarian impromptu on it.
It's a piratey comic book. Like, there's just there's sea creatures. There's a lot of shivering me timbers. There's a bunch of pirate stuff.
I'm gonna have to write
that down here. It's on Netflix. You can check it out. I'd recommend that. It's only 8 episodes, but One Piece, the Netflix season, and it's already been greenlit for a season 2, which is like
so. Piece as in piece of 8.
Correct. Yes. Okay. One Piece. I left everything in One Piece. That's what it'd be.
Gotcha. Called. Okay.
Larry Rhodes. I'm sorry, Dredd. How have you been though? What's up with you?
Doing well. We had our church AGM on Friday, So we've got, you know, reestablished our officer rank, and our crew are all together, and we've got a bunch of stuff we're moving along with, including a pro bono lawyer representing me in my quest to get my ID with ICBC. So very positive stuff.
You know, if you just hang out at a dog park, I'm sure you can find more pro bono lawyers, right? Or like maybe a butchery, just be like, hey, who loves bones? I do. Are you a lawyer? I am. We can hang out. Larry, we'd love to check in with you. By the way, don't mind this random cough I got. I had COVID for the last, about 2 weeks ago, I had COVID. I was thankful that I got vaccinated because my symptoms were fairly mild. However, I do have this like nagging case of uvulitis, which is just like some slight inflammation in the back of my throat. That's it. Non-productive cough. Tested myself yesterday. In fact, I'm still negative. So just don't mind me if I got this weird little coughing. But Larry, checking in with you. How you been, my friend?
I've been fine. I'm not riding my motorcycle or anything. My knee is really killing me. I'm going to see a doctor this Wednesday, though, about possible surgery. Who knows? I'll be on crutches in a few weeks. But
okay,
toward a road to recovery.
Yeah. Speaking of weird roads of recovery, my mom recently had a toenail surgery. And so I wake up now to notifications that are like, your mother has contacted you. And I tap it, and it's just this weird picture of like half a toe that has like cuts in it, because she's showing me pictures steadily healing. I know, right? And so she's just asking like, hey, is this looking good? Or is it like too much pus? Or is it, why is my skin wise? Like, mom, your band-aids are too tight. Let it like dry up a little bit. Yeah. And I'm just like, every day I wake up to that. But I it's, you know, it's who else could you show it to than your own family? So it's one of those things. But she's doing well. She's on the path to recovery too. Guys, wanted to talk about some hot topics. We'll have a quick lead through on gender today. And I think what we could do is probably define what it means to us before we talk about it in detail, and then I'll lead it up to Dread Pirate Higgs. And I'll throw out my hat. I don't know what gender, how the word is used in the most popular sense today, because it seems to be a lot of contrasting opinions, even among people who handle that term as like a very, if even for people who think that term's very important, I don't hear a consensus on what it means. And so as a result, I don't want to identify or claim knowledge on something that seems to be something transformed to something that's still very ambiguous. I do know when I was a kid, gender was just the more polite form of saying sex. They would have on like forms or policies for like people who didn't want to have the word sex on the document. They put gender to be a bit more
Correct. Yeah.
Now it means a completely different thing. And so I recognize that these don't mean the same thing anymore, but I don't think there's any consensus on what gender means. And I also don't like what it's attempting to define, because I think that is inherently tied to society and culture as it is today. Or so like what it meant to be a woman today, gender woman today, is completely different than what it meant 50 years ago. And so like today I woke up to try to figure out the pay-per-view results of a UFC fight that was headlined by two women fighters, two female athletes that fight each other in a cage. Like that concept would have been completely foreign to what it meant to be a woman 20 years ago, 10 years ago, compared to now where it's just, oh, no, that's a normal thing. And maybe they'll have a trilogy fight later on, or maybe there'll be a bunch of other female fighters. Like the idea of what it means to be a woman and what it means to be a man seems to be steeped in culture and very fluid. And so as a result, I don't understand why we're coming up with labels to define stuff like that. But that's me. Just me. I'm just me. I don't personally put a lot of weight into the label. Dread or Larry, what do you think the idea of gender is?
Well, in today's society, it's kind of a loaded question. I know what gender roles are. I know that you can be one gender or sexual physiology, but identify as a different one. It's more fluid today than it's ever been in human history. But I think that we need to endorse it and embrace it, because it's who people are. It's what makes them happy. It's what allows them to love the person that they love. You know, it does. It's it's more about what you're attracted to. You can't change what you're attracted to or how you feel inside. I mean, we have tried it as a society to change that as punishment, as legal punishment. You know, you are going to be reassigned your gender because of this court trial. And it's always failed. It's always had horrendous results. And we need to reconcile the fact that we need to recognize what people are and how they feel and how they who they love.
And Dredd, before I get to you, could I just address a quick comment from Larry? So, like, I want to just make a big distinction between sex and gender, because I don't want to conflate the two. I do think they are two different things. However, when someone is assigning, when you say, like, someone was assigned the wrong gender as a baby, I don't know if doctors are in the business of assigning gender, or if they are assigning sex.
Right.
Like, they will look at
absolutely.
And they will assign a sex, like, this baby is male, this baby is female.
Well, they don't really have anything else to go on.
I don't know if you're going to like guitar music or if you're going to like ballet. I don't know that. I can't assign your gender, but I can't assign your sex. And if the kid disagrees, it's like, maybe you disagree with the societal add-on that they put onto sex, which is gender, and you want to be a different gender. It's like, totally fine. But as far as what your sex is, that might be a different conversation. Like, that might be.
I remember as a young boy, I was asking my mother, how does the doctor know what sex the baby is when they put it on the form? Well, they look.
I just want to make
sure it's
like, you have a right to be whatever gender you want, but I think like there's consequences that comes with what sex you are, and that might affect like what you can participate in, what pills you need, what kind of medical checkups you need to go to, like what sort of way we need to make sure that you can stay healthy and viable in society, etc. Gary, what do you think? Or what do you think gender is and the add-ons that I put on? Sorry about that.
Were you talking to me?
I'm talking to you, Dredd. What do you think?
Oh, I see. I've got my name wrong here. Oh, I get it.
You're going to fix it for you?
Yeah. So, yeah, if you don't mind. So, you know, sex in these words all are context dependent.
Yes.
So depending on the context in which you're having the conversation will dictate the way in which you use these terms and the meanings that are associated with them. Certainly sex in the common language, I think, is biological, right? So you just think about in 10,000 years when anthropologists and archaeologists are digging up your bones, how would you be identified? And it isn't by what you clothe yourself with or how you act or your mannerisms or the inflections in your speech or the kind of language you use. It's your biological construction. Your physiological
attributes.
Makeup, yes. And that will determine whether you're one or the other. Gender, of course, is nothing to do with that. And I agree with Larry that we need to, embrace the idea that gender and sex are different, but at the same time, not make it sort of a primary characteristic of what a person is on, deep
well
down. Because again, like even a person's color is the least interesting thing that you could consider about a person. And I think gender is kind of the same thing. Like, it doesn't matter to me because I'm not in that kind of a relationship with that person. If I just meet someone on the street, I'm not really concerned about what their gender is or their color or their sex. You know, it's, and I think we have to get over that. That reliance on these rather superficial identifiers, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Can I?
It's like hair color. Who cares?
Let me address one thing. I think there might be a better word that we can find. So, like, I always considered sex to be a descriptor. Like, I'm just describing someone. So, like, if someone said, "Hey, who stole your car?" I don't say, Well, it's a person that values classical guitar music. Right. And I don't want to make it. It's like, just describe them. I'm not telling you to identify the person. I just want a description so that we can objectively look for a person that looks like this description. They're wearing a red shirt. That's a man. And it's a man. It's like, or it's a male.
Yeah.
Whatever you want to say.
These whether he prefers Jean-Paul Sartre or Kant yes. as a philosopher, who cares?
Right. But right. I might identify as things that aren't necessarily what I'm described as. So like I might yes. be a person who identifies as a Foo Fighters fan
yeah.
or
that's exactly what I mean. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Or someone that likes, you know, I don't know, electronic music or a PlayStation over Xbox. Like these yeah. might be things I identify as.
Or Chevy. Who cares?
And they describe sort of like my identity, but not as my physical description, right? Yeah. And so yeah. I see sex as a describer of my physical state, my biology, right? And I yeah. see gender as sort of like the identifier. Like, what do you identify past just your basic attributes that we can objectively assess? Like, tell me more about you. I want to learn about you. And I think if we understood it like that, it's a lot easier for me to wrap my head around what gender is. Because then, of course, you can be, there's going to be so many different kinds of genders and different ways that people relate to them. And they used to be things that we embrace and try to work towards learning about each other. Mm. But I think the value of it is when you separate it from sex.
Yes.
Because I think some of the confusion or the problems that I have with some of the debates that are going on is in times when it's convenient, they overlap to problematic circumstances. And then other times they're completely separate, only when it's also convenient too. And I'm like, dude, if they are separate terms, keep them separate. Identity, description. That way the realm of biology can just stay consistent with descriptions. And we can just say, hey, this is what sex is. This is how we understand it, how it works. This is how we can test it. This is how we can prevent certain diseases that are predominant in certain different kinds of sexes.
Mm-hmm.
These are intersex people. And this is also valid. And we don't have to change them one way or the other. There's just another state of sex. And we can better understand this as a science practice. And it doesn't reduce people or make them less valid. But gender could just be its own, you know, psychological, interpersonal, get to know you sort of thing. And let that just be a separate realm. That's not the same thing. That would be my meaningful variables. That's the only thing I would fight for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like, you know, whether you're a Catholic or an Episcopalian, you know, it's how you identify yourself, not how you're objectively identified.
Hey, that's
I wouldn't be able to tell the difference.
Yeah, you couldn't exactly. tell the differences if they were in a lineup. A police right. lineup.
Yeah, yeah, maybe like gender is how you.
He looks it. Like a Catholic.
Sex is how what? Other people can identify you. It's like right. sex is how other people identify you. Gender is how you identify yourself or express yourself.
Yes, that's yeah, exactly. Yeah,
I like that. Yeah. Dredd, you had made a comment of people becoming ornaments. What did you mean by that?
Well, I guess, you know, using these superficial identifiers as the substance of your being, you know, or, you know, somehow that it is, you know, directly correlated to who you are as a person.
Mm.
You know, even people like who, where sort of appearance is overtaking substance as yes. a key factor in yeah. how people are represented or present yeah. themselves.
Well, the things that jump to my mind when you say people as ornaments is trophy wives, something like that. Is that what you have in mind?
No, not specifically. I'm talking more about people who make themselves ornaments.
Like the diamond encrusted cross that
tattoos or, you know, just that rely much more on the superficial aspects of their person rather than developing a deeper, I guess, more interesting interior person, intellectually
or more honest complex, or,
as opposed to just superficially more, complex.
More real.
Dredd, yeah, there's a good
point. You know, it just seems to me that, you know, and, you know, of course, as everyone gets older, they say about the younger generation, but, you know, it seems to me that people rely much more just on these superficial qualities as the things by which they believe they should be judged. as opposed to anything of more intellectual substance.
Larry.
Well, it seems that today's society is kind of pushing us in that direction as our interactions are more fleeting, like on the internet or in person. You know, we see each other for a little while and then move on, that it becomes more important to rely on outward signals than internal honesty, integrity, and
oh, I like it, Larry.
And all that.
Yes, that's good. Because I like
the person may never have the time to learn the true you.
Well, everybody has 30,000 friends. You know, everyone has 30,000, 10,000 friends. Right. Like, I don't have time for everybody. Yeah. You know, my thing on top of it to go on Dread's story was I once went to Sweden to a metal festival, and I like metal music. And I would say, like, I'm pretty good at having, like, my favorite kinds of bands and different genres of metal, because there's not just one kind of metal. But I didn't bring I don't have any metal regalia, and I didn't bring any, like, black t-shirts with me. So, like, I'm there working at, like, a lab, and so I only have, like, my dress shirts and, like, my normal slacks. Mm. And I go to a metal festival that's, like, a three-day festival where there's just people with face paint. They got the spikes. They got the black shirts. They got tattoos. And I'm there in my dress shirt. And I felt everyone was super cool. But I felt like, one, I'm not even, like, in from this country. And then, two, it's like when the metal people are like, they're like, they're singing in Swedish, which is like the perfect language for metal music. Like, who of you guys are animals today? And I'm like, yeah, I'm an animal. And everyone's just like, okay, he's hanging out with us. He might. But the idea of, like, not looking the part or not having the accessories, like, I probably enjoy that music just as much as everybody else, but I didn't have the accessory limit to demonstrate that. I didn't ornament myself. Would you say that's supportable?
So I'm actually, I think I'd go a little deeper because, like Jean-Paul Sartre, he talked about authenticity, being your authentic self. Mm. And when you're not, he called it bad faith. And he made the example of a waiter who has never waited a table in his life before, but is dressed like a waiter, tries to act like a waiter, tries to carry the trays like a waiter, but isn't a waiter. And that is bad faith.
So he's not working at the store?
He's not being authentic to who he is on the inside. He's an ornament. He's pretending to be something on the outward show that he isn't on the inside.
Is it like stolen
valor? And that's what I mean by people becoming ornaments, is that they're ornaments to themselves.
I see.
They have an outward show that doesn't actually reflect who they are on the inside. And I think Larry hits it on the head here with social media and the sort of fleeting moments that we actually have to connect with one another, is that we just do our best to make a first impression without giving any thought to how it actually reflects who we are on the inside.
I got it. It sounds sounds to me like stolen valor, to a point where people who dress up like military people, because they in their minds want to be perceived as a hero,
right?
They don't realize the harm.
They want people saying thank you for your service.
Yeah, just so they can feel good about themselves, but not necessarily earn it and diminish the value of the people who have made that sacrifice, which I find harmful.
Yeah.
I would say this. I'm going to throw one more thing. On the idea of gender, I do feel like we have social norms that we apply to attributes, and that we've either masculinized or feminized them. And I feel like that is something that evolves over time, but is also inherently sort of like meaningless, because we know it's a social construct. When I hear people say, I identify as this separate gender, I'm only seeing them point to another arbitrary basket of social contrivances. And in my mind, it would be like, listen, if you're a guy and you want to paint your nails, you can be a guy that paints your nails. Like, that should be something that's just in everyone's basket. Like, that shouldn't necessarily be a feminine thing. That should just be a thing that you want to do with your fingernails. Yeah. And I don't think it makes you any less masculine to paint your nails, or like other men, or I don't know, rollerblade or want to be a stay-at-home dad, like whatever weird contrivances that we put in the masculine feminine box. I feel like we should just stop looking at those boxes and just let it be more freely distributed as far as traits go, because we know we have great female athletes. We know we have great dads that can stay home. Mm-hmm. We have great managers. We know we have female doctors that are great. We know we have great men nurses. Like all these weird lines in the sand that we built up, I find stifles social progress. And so when people start generating genders and saying like these are real things and this is what this gender means and it has these attributes,
and then they start throwing the word should around, this is what this gender should be like, this is what this gender should do, you know.
I find that silly, but I do appreciate that we're having the conversation, because I'm hoping that the conclusion that we'll reach is that this is silly. We shouldn't be saying that men shouldn't be nurses or only women can be this degree or all these little attributes. Only females can be ballerinas. Like none of this makes sense. Like this, we should just conclude that this is silly. Maybe we should either come up with new definitions or usages of gender or get rid of the ones or these ideas that we have, because they're prejudiced and biased as well. And that's not moving us any forward. That would be my thought process. What do you think, Dredd?
I would agree. Absolutely. And when people pigeonhole people into these sort of roles, again, it really speaks to inequality. And if we're all really interested in equality, then we have to kind of let go of those biases, right? We have to be able to really truly say and take it into ourselves that we have to look past that just consider it a superficiality and move on.
I could completely know someone's gender and still not know if they're a good person or if they're a person worth hanging out.
Precisely. Yeah.
Exactly.
Those aren't qualities that make or break a person on the inside. It's who they are on the inside, and that's what we should be looking for.
The society as a whole says it's what's on the inside that counts. But then it turns hypocritical when they judge you by what's on the outside.
Yeah.
Right. I like intentions and actions. How about that? Let's judge people based on those two things. And let's move everything down to just descriptors, because that's all there is at the end of the day. You know, like, let's not identify ourselves with our ornaments. Larry, any final thoughts? And would you mind taking a second?
Well, not final, but this is the break. We'll take a break. Come back.
That's good timing, because I'm just going to grab my dog.
Okay. This is the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM here in Knoxville, Tennessee. We'll be right back after this short break.
Yeah, okay. The concept of believing something without evidence is only ever said to be virtuous in a book.
Welcome back to the second half of the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. I'm Doubter 5, and we're on WOZO Radio, 103.9 LPFM here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Let's take just a moment to talk about the Atheist Society of Knoxville. ASK was founded in 2002. We're in our 21st year and have over 1,000 members. We have weekly in-person meetings here in Knoxville every Tuesday evening at Knoxville's Old City at Barley's Tap Room and Pizzeria. Look for us inside at the high top table, or if it's pretty weather, outside on the deck. Just go out on the deck, turn left, and go to the end of the deck. You can find us online at at Facebook, meetup.com, or knoxvilleatheist.org. You can also just Google us as Knoxville Atheist. It's just that simple. By the way, if you don't live in Knoxville, you should still go to Meetup and do a search for an atheist group in your town. Don't find one. Start one. Right. Wombat, where do you want to pick up?
I want to talk about corporations and religions, and maybe there's some ties between the two. So recently, there's been an uproar with a gaming engine company. A game engine is essentially a program that makes video games. And there are a lot of popular ones out. One of the most popular is called Unity. Unity is a game engine that allows creators to be able to make video games that can go on consoles, PCs, etc. And in fact, if you played video games in, like, I don't know, in the last 17 years, guaranteed you have played at least a couple of Unity games, if not a majority of the games that you played have been on the Unity platform. Now, here's the weird thing. Unity is a $12 billion company. They have a lot of profits. However, like companies do, they always want more profit. And so they found a really good way to make more money, which is to charge the developers, not just for the cost of their game engine subscription, not just for a little bit of revenue from every game that's sold, but also a new fee that just came out a couple of weeks ago that charges the devs for every single time one of their customers installs the game. They will be charged 20 cents per game install. Now think about this. If I have a game that I downloaded from Unity and I have it on my PC and I install it, a developer gets charged 20 cents. And if I take that same game and uninstall it and reinstall it again, maybe like 3 months later, because I was just rearranging software on my computer, they get charged another 20 cents. And if I install that on another computer because I own the game and I just want to play it on two different PCs, maybe I have one in my living room, one in my bedroom, they get charged another 20 cents. If I stole the game, if I pirated the game, which I try not to do, but I also don't do it anymore. I used to do it a bunch of times when I was a little kid, but now I don't anymore. If I install a pirated game, no offense to Pirates Dread, that developer also gets charged 20 cents. The money all goes to Unity.
It seems so counterproductive. I mean, to charge your developers, I mean, to ding them every time your game is installed.
Think about it.
Could be dozens of developers on a single game. Do they charge them all 20 cents per installation?
That's a good question. I don't know that. But I do know this. If I make a free game that's like a tutorial, or just like I'm a YouTuber and I make free games for people, I will get charged for every single time someone installs that game.
Right.
There's a lot.
It's counterproductive.
I can bankrupt myself.
This will not stand.
Right, so that was the initial message that came out. And since then, Unity has made some clarifications and regressions saying, like, listen, okay, in order for us to charge you, you have to make at least $200,000 in the last month and have $200,000 or 200 installs. And they're trying to, like, make tiers so where people who make free games don't get necessarily charged. People who buy games as a charity bundle don't get charged, don't charge the developers. They're trying to make it so that they can still keep the rule, but there's still that fee that didn't necessarily improve their product or was in the best interest of their consumers. What do you think, Larry?
Well, you're talking about a game development engine, right?
Yes.
As versus the people who are writing the game using that engine. Now, it depends on how you define the word developer. Bethesda is a developer. It's a corporation. Correct. Now, if they charge, if Bethesda uses their engine to develop a game and then they sell games and people install them, I can understand that the people who develop Unity would want like 20 cents per installation from the developer, meaning the corporation who puts the game out. So maybe it's a misunderstanding of who the quote developer is that we're talking about here.
So what's unfortunate is it is that one, if I was a one person in my bedroom and I was making a video game, I would be the developer. It's and if Bethesda is a corporation, they're still the developer. They'd still be charged if they're using a Unity product. What's sad, though, is what people would rather have is a revenue share system where it's once you buy the game from that money, a percentage of that money will go to Unity rather than put me in a situation where I may not be making any money on my game right now. But if 14 million people reinstall the game for whatever reason, maybe I announce the sequel and a bunch of people want to play the first game, and they reinstall it on their computers, now I have this $50,000 fee that I had to pay out of nowhere just because I announced a new game that came out. So like, it puts me in a precarious situation where I don't get an influx of money and Unity gets a percentage of it. I just get charged money. And the bottom line is, this is not a fee that enhances the product. It's not a fee that suddenly gives me more value. As a developer or the consumer of their product, I am stuck with this tax in an ecosystem that I can't escape without a lot of work on my end. And they know that. That's why they can charge it. It's not in my best interest. So my thought process would be, do you know what also is in your best interest? Do you also know any large organizations that operate not necessarily in the best interest of their consumers? And I thought, isn't this sound a lot like religion? Because there's a big upheaval on the idea of Unity, but no one's talking about how Christianity has never offered a product for anyone to physically have or tangibly experience. Yet they still charge money. They still charge your identity. They still want your kids to go to their Sunday schools. They still want to inhibit science. They still want to tell you not to get vaccinated. They still want to tell you what politicians to vote for. There's a lot of social taxes that come with belief in a religion, a lot of fees that come with it that are both monetary, time-based, and social-based, and there's no enhanced value. When Jesus says, hey, listen, I need you to tithe, why didn't any of his followers be like, and what we're going to get in what will we get additionally?
In return.
With additional times. Like, well, you get eternity next to the right side of my dad. It's like, yeah, that's what we had before, but now you're asking us to tithe. So, like, we're going to get more stuff, right?
After you die.
What added value are you bringing to this?
Yes, with all these additional charges, not only that, but like with the rate of inflation and the number of people who are working and the more money you should think you'd be getting, I think I would at least get another product, at least a Bible 3.0. Like, can we get some miracles on demand? Like, I'm still praying. Like, come on, can we come up with some sort of enhanced value for the customer? Because my return on investment is only further depleting. Like, what do you think, Larry?
Well, I think that I'm going to try to offset some of the customer comments going forward. That they're going to say, well, it's voluntary. You know, you know going in that you'll have to do this. You know that what the fees are and what you're expected of you before you join the club. That's not true for children.
Not true.
The people that inherit the ideas, the methodologies, the costs, without any benefits from it until after they die. And the guilt is a large cost of it too. But it's not an entirely voluntary thing. And if it were, I wouldn't worry about it. As long, wait till the person is 21 years old, pitch your religion to them. If they want to join, no problem.
Right. Not only that, but like, I feel like it's a violation of the spirit of a terms of service, so think about it like this. If Apple came out suddenly and said, for every Apple product you have in your home and on your person, we will charge you $1 per month. So if you have three iPhones in your family, we're just going to charge you $3. That's our new terms of service. And be like, why are you charging this new fee? It's like, because if you don't like it, you can go to a different phone. It's like, well, I bought into a yearly contract for this phone. I can't necessarily swap it out. But I bought into it with the understanding that I wouldn't be charged this additional fee. So like, you've sort of adjusted your terms of service that breached the contract that we started, which was the understanding that I wouldn't be charged these additional fees. When developers bought Unity, they didn't know this fee was going to come down, today. And they're still stuck on the hook for a project that won't be out for another 4 or 5 years, where they may have to sell a product that incurs them a fee that reduces their bottom line at the end of the day. Like, they don't want that either. With the Bible, hey, listen, this is our God. This is your path to salvation. You, it sounds great. You're going to have some potlucks. You're going to meet some great people. We're going to have great moral privileges. We'll feel a lot better than everybody else when you've chosen people. It's like, great. You buy into it. But then there's that the baggage of hell. There's the baggage of evil. There's the baggage of guilt. There's the baggage of now I have to discriminate against people who don't necessarily believe the same things I do.
Or
I
gates.
Have to choose the schools I have to take my kids. I have to hate gay. I have to, depending on the church I go to, hate gay people or accept them, but only them and not their sin, right? Like I have to like start parsing people from things that are part of their authentic selves and come up with these arbitrary bifurcations of people instead of taking them as their full authentic self. It's terms of service that you weren't sold into, but is the bait and switch of a lot of religions, except for Pastafarianism. I feel like Pastafarianism is pretty cool.
Yeah, I would agree. Pastafarianisms are an exception to that. We're the new religion, right? We don't, you know, we don't demand anything. I mean, it's a dogma-free religion, fortunately. You can take it or leave it. Like they say, we have the God back guarantee. You know, try us out for 30 days. If you don't like it, your old God would probably take you back. So dogma and all. So
that's cute.
I had something on my mind. Hopefully it'll come back because hit the point here.
Feel free to interrupt any time, but I would say like overall, the agreement that was made at the start, the one that I signed up for, isn't what I'm being offered. Let's go ahead, Dredd.
Yeah. So it's interesting that people develop this behavior themselves. It's not necessarily that a company is trying to do it. For instance, you know, people whose product loyalty tends to, you know, go over the top. You know, I'm a Ford man. You Chevy jerks, you know, you all drive pieces of crap, you know.
Tribalism.
Like people actually they have a proclivity for being loyal to products. So
right.
I think companies of course can exploit that proclivity and then charge for it. And
yes,
of course, religion is very much that way, right? You don't go into the religion saying, I'm a Catholic, I'm going to hate Protestants. You go in the Catholic and you buy into the culture and then you get ensconced in, you know, what's going on in that religion and it creeps in. It's
right.
That slow creep of all the other attendant values and ways of thinking that suddenly you're a different person at the end and don't even recognize that the change has occurred in yourself.
Very true. So true. In fact, I want to highlight a point. If you ever look at a hemi cut or a half cut, cross-sectional cut of a human brain, you will see essentially a central core that looks very different than what's on the outer surface. So like when you think of a brain, you think of this pink, wrinkly surface. That's the outer part of your brain. There is a core to your brain that's very consistent with like other animal kinds of brains. And the reason why we have these two kinds of structures of brains is because we have evolved on top of like our old historical brains.
Yeah.
So like we have
the reptile brain. Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yep.
When we say reptile brain, we're not literally saying we have a literal reptile brain in our head. We're just saying we have like a prehistoric fundamental brain stem that we've added on additional functionality to, sort of like adding on additional chips to a computer or like a new engine.
Which is generally how evolution works.
Yeah. Right. We're adding on. That gives us the ability to have these like higher ambitious, more arbitrary, ambiguous conversations about nuanced topics empirically, right? But the thing is, that core brain is still capable of doing some thought process and affecting how the rest of the brain works. So when it comes to things like, is this a danger or am I safe? Is this a good thing to eat or is it a bad thing to eat? Does it taste good? Does it not taste good? Like all those core functions are still there in our brain. And when a corporation's like, how can we sell our product to more people? Should we sell our car based on the idea of how many airbags there are or, you know, what our fuel efficiency is or stuff like that? Or can we just have our truck run through the desert and be like, you're a big man. You're strong. You need a Ford truck.
That's right.
Yeah. Put a naked, scantily clad woman in the back seat of that car. Now the lizard brain's firing. He's like, we need this. your lizard brain's inside your brain being like, hey, we need the car that does that. It's like, but we only drive to work and back. It's like, yeah, but this drive in the desert and there's a pretty lady in the back, and that means we can have proclivity to have more kids, which is good. And it looks safe. It looks safe. There's no predators around anything.
Back seat is big enough to have sex in. Exactly.
I feel like corporations know what it takes to get us on board with things that aren't even necessarily in our best interest. And they have fine-tuned their marketing specifically to get through to that fleshy, wrinkly part of our brain, back to the lizard brain. And I don't see a difference when it comes to religion. I find like religion operates on the same marketing values of like the tobacco industry, of like the alcohol industry. It is targeting you. Do you feel uncomfortable? Do you feel sleepy when you wake up? Do you feel like you're not, you could know more people? Well, let me help you connect with more people, potentially find more mates, make you feel more safe. Mm-hmm. And give you that one salve, which is you're going to die one day. Wouldn't it be great if you didn't? Wouldn't it be great if death was just a change of address? Oh man, do I have the answer for you? For a lizard brain operating system, that is like the best news you could possibly get. It's the best product you can possibly get. But we know from our higher brains that it's essentially snake oil. What do you think, Dredd?
Well, I was going to say that, for the 200,000 years that we have been Homo sapiens, we've been, through that evolution, we've been running on our emotions and reason and logic and skepticism are all very recent developments, and take up maybe the last 250 years of that 200,000 year evolutionary train.
Yeah,
and so it doesn't come naturally to the human brain to reason and think these things through. And like David Hume says, reason is the slave to the passions. Mm. And the only thing that motivates us is our passions. And then we reason to justify it.
Right.
So, of course, marketing is targeting the emotional triggers that make us then use reason to justify our choices made through our passions, right?
Reason is a learned behavior. You have to learn how to reason. You have to practice your reason.
You have to practice
something that if you stop using for 3 years, you're going to be just as good. It's not a bicycle. You have to constantly rigorously test it. And that takes energy. It takes a proper education and it takes proper training and it takes proper practice, rigorous practice. It's a discipline. And we're not born.
Not just with yourself, with other people.
Absolutely.
I mean, it works best in a community where people share those skills so that you can hone them against each other and not just independent.
And everything that you're saying takes effort, like the energy well to be in a society where reason is touted as a discipline that people endorse and actually go through the process of training and uplifting is so rare just due to the fact that it's a lot easier to operate on authoritarianism or just strictly passions, because that's our default state. And if you're asking improvements you can make to humanity, it'd be stuff like that, like give us the ability to reason out of the gate. Why don't we have that, Larry? What do you think?
It also takes a well-stocked baloney detection kit.
Yes,
Carl Sagan brought that term into our lexicon through his book A Demon Haunted World.
Great.
But in other words, it's basically the tools of logic and exception. So I would recommend just doing a Google search for the Baloney Detection Kit by Carl Sagan, and also the rules of logic, and learn those rules of logic will help you throughout your day-to-day life making better decisions.
Absolutely. And just to follow with Larry's thing there, Skeptic Magazine actually produces a booklet called the Baloney Detection Kit, which is just a couple bucks. I've got 24 of them that when I come across somebody that looks like they're moving towards a more skeptical mental framework, I give it to them as a means to bolster their skills and build them up in that. And it's a nice little pamphlet. And like I say, it's $1.50 or something like that.
Yeah, so. I just want to say I find this conversation inherently prejudiced because my gender identity is baloney.
Well, I'm a squirrel, so.
Are you what they mean when they say squirrel?
Yeah. Guys, let's see. One quick one. I had a weird term that I wanted to present. Maybe we'll talk about it more in the future. This is the idea of a person that goes to church or goes to mass and is still an overall terrible person once they leave mass. And I call it a mass hole. Like, please don't be a mass hole, right? I think we can say on the radio, like, Larry, you give me the look, but like, I think that counts. It's a brand new word. These would be my three rules for whether or not you're a mass hole. One, just letting you know, you can be your religion. I have no problem with there being religions. I'd love for everybody to be their religion, but I don't want you to force your belief on other people. So please don't force your beliefs on other people. I'd also even, and my opinion, I think even forcing your kid to go to like a Bible study or stuff when they're in that impressionable age constitutes as forcing your beliefs on other people. If you want to be the religion you are, good, but give other people the opportunity to like follow you. Don't encourage them as the sole loving authority figure in your life of what they should be and what they shouldn't be. I feel like that's a problematic situation, or at least give them the options of like what the full variety of tables are, or start with non-belief first. And then when they have a good reason to fall into, go for it. Because who wants to have all these believers that believe just by virtue of the fact that they were indoctrinated at a young age? Second one is don't inflict harm. Don't cause unnecessary harm. I'd throw circumcisions into this, not getting vaccinated, inhibition of sciences. Don't go out of your way to cause harm to other people. Prejudices, attacking different groups just because they believe different things that you do, or practice love in a different way that you do. That's unnecessary. So forcing belief, inflicting harm. And then the third one and the last one is using your religion, your experience of mass, to not be a good person. So like, oh, I don't have to contribute to this charity because I prayed for them. Or, oh, earthquake happened in here. I'll pray and then I'll go back to the rest of my life. Or I don't have to think about bad things or the crimes that are happening or inordinate institutional racism or inflections of lack of privilege to people who wear pirate hats and can't right. necessarily wear them in their own driver's license, because when I go to church, I'm a good person and I prayed and I know I'm okay. It's like, don't use your excuse to not be a good person and unilaterally offer those privileges to everybody.
That's all mass holery.
It's mass holery. Just, you know, I'm not telling you to be a good person. I'm just saying, don't use your religion as an excuse to not be a good person. Because that, in my opinion, is just another form of harm.
Which is very common.
very common. So don't be an asshole. That would be my takeaway.
Yeah,
that's my final words. Dread Pirate Higgs, what's yours?
Well, you can find my stuff on Mind Pirate YouTube channel, MindPyrate. I've been doing weekly sermons on various topics.
I've seen them.
They're very short. They're like 3.5 to 5 minutes long. Just little snippets of, some personal reflections. And I think they're starting to get interesting because I'm starting to get into a groove. So, check it out. Of course, I live stream this Sunday mornings for me at 7 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, and also do the views on the news often at 11 a.m. Sunday morning. So yeah, check it out. If you like it, subscribe.
Nice. And Dredd, looking forward to seeing latest updates in your quest for chaos now that you're and ready to go. Along with that, I just want to say, from my perspective, I do think that we should think about religions and corporations in the same light. And whenever we're really upset about a corporation doing something really against the consumers, we should also think, hey, what is religion offering us? And isn't this almost being run like a corporation? If that seems crazy to you, think about how people can follow a corporation as if it was a cult. Like, in my opinion, in a sense, like Apple products tend to like operate within a closed ecosystem and they have a lot of fanatics. And if they were to suddenly come out with a charge per device that they sell just randomly, I think people would be upset by that. So why not, for a dollar cost of like some Apple $1 trillion corporation, why don't we get upset when religion says, hey, by the way, we're gonna need your kid to not get vaccinated, hate these groups of people, vote for this politician when they become older. And on, oh, by the way, you need to marry this kid. Like, it can get really stark with how religions operate. And so I say, think about that impact in the same context you would as an oracle corporation. Think of a religion as a corporation, and if you abide by it still, then you abide by it. But if you don't, now we're thinking about it on the same level. Now you'll see it how an atheist sees it. Larry, final thoughts, and what do you think?
Well, excuse me, my content can be found at digitalfreethought.com. Be sure to click on the blog button for our radio show archives. We got all 300 shows there. Atheist songs and articles on the subject. My YouTube channel is at Doubter5. And you can find my book, Atheism, What's It All About, on Amazon. Oh, there it is. Jed's holding it up. And if you're having trouble leaving religious beliefs behind, you can get help from religion, from recoveringfromreligion.org, that is. If you're a member of clergy, and but have come to see that the claims of religion are not justified, there's, if you're stuck behind the pulpit, as it were, there's help for you at theclergyproject.org. Actually, drop the, and it's just clergyproject.org. Remember, everybody is going to some other religion's hell. The time to worry about it is when they prove that heavens and hells and souls are real. Until then, don't sweat it. Enjoy your life, and you'll see you next Wednesday at 7 o'clock here on WOZO Radio. Say bye, everybody.
Bye.
Go ahead.